In many countries, one in three kids is overweight or obese. Plus, kids grow at different rates, so it's harder to tell if your own child is a healthy weight. Recent research shows that overweight teens are much less inclined now to try to lose weight, and parents are less likely to address it. So how can health behaviours of the next generation be changed? Who needs to address it and how? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Meet Floyd. As a senior, he is still contributing to his community. Watch.
I'm a graduate from Chico State in agriculture, and we've always had gardens. I've grown up having a garden, but these are all in raised beds. We grow a lot of kale, collard greens, mustard, Swiss chard. Here's some of the end of a turnip crop that we've had, and this turnip puts out a beautiful top of leaves in the top. People just love these leaves, and that's a good turnip to eat too. I've always been pretty healthy, and even though I ate the way I did, I always ate a lot of vegetables. But you kind of grow up in a family and you follow along the customs of the family. You know, we had a family of four. We'd use 3 pounds of butter every week. In fact, we raised a lot of our own animals and had them slaughtered, and lots of cheeses. Everything that wasn't good for you, I was eating, and a lot of it. Kohlrabi. I used to weigh 250 pounds, and I'm only 5'6", so I was as tall standing down as I was laying up, you know. We have a lot of different herbs planted out here. We're not doing much with them right now, but I just liked food. And I traveled a lot, and I traveled in different countries and stuff, and France was always a killer. I'd always overeat in France. And the food really wasn't that healthy. I don't miss it. I don't miss it.
On today's show, we have a unique MD who's influencing her community in significant ways. We'll create some interesting lunches, work out with Sean, and hear from Floyd. So let's get on with the news. In the headlines today, vigorous exercise linked to blindness, introducing veggies to your newborn, and Mediterranean diet for reflux. Macular degeneration is a major cause of blindness in the elderly, and now a recent study suggests an association with vigorous exercise. Research from Korea looked at 450 people aged over 45 with neovascular age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, and inquired about past exercise habits. Those reporting vigorous exercise in the past were 25% more likely to have AMD than those reporting no exercise. For those exercising 5 or more days a week, there was a 50% higher risk. 1 to 4 times a week, a 30% higher risk than those who were sedentary. This link between exercise and AMD has never been seen before, and researchers have no biological explanation for it. Further studies then are needed before recommendations can be made. Infants are less fussy about eating their veggies if they're exposed to the taste early in life through breast milk. For a month, 100 women were either given no juice or half a glass of carrot, celery, beet or vegetable juice just before breastfeeding, starting at 2 weeks, 6 weeks or 10 weeks after birth. Later, when solids were introduced, the babies whose exposure began at 2 weeks ate more of the carrot-flavoured cereal and they ate it faster. So train your toddler from the time he or she is born that veggies are just part of your diet and therefore part of theirs. A plant-based Mediterranean diet might be the answer to laryngopharyngeal reflux. For the first 3 years of a study, 84 new patients with reflux were given standard treatment, a proton pump inhibitor and reflux precautions. Over the next 3 years, 99 people were treated with reflux precautions and no medications. Instead, they were given alkaline water with a pH of over 8 and a 90% plant-based Mediterranean-style diet. At the end of the study, 54% of the medication group got significant improvement and 62% of the dietary group. That suggests a healthy, plant-based diet may avoid the side effects and cost of drug medications. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's guest is Dr. Megan Greger, a family medicine physician in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania. She co-founded the Kellen Foundation because she saw the health of the young people slipping away. Here she explains.
I've been a family physician for about 20 years now, and over the course of my career, I've seen people, families, but especially children, become less and less healthy, not only just from their kind of outward appearance, but their blood pressure is getting higher. Their cardiovascular fitness is getting less. So we used to think, you know, I was born in the 70s, so, you know, I was out running around, a child of the 80s, and it used to be that kids are outside running around all the time. Like, that's what you did as your extra activity. Now we see a lot of the kids, if they just run around the gymnasium once, they're out of breath, they're coughing. You know, some of that has to do with the increased asthma risk and things like that that are going along with obesity. But there's a lot of decreased endurance, and as well as just general healthy lifestyle. And because of that, with the kids, we're seeing a lot of things in children that we didn't used to see until they were adults, like an increased rate of type 2 diabetes. We've been seeing gallbladder disease in like teenagers, which was not something that you used to see before.
No, that was, we hit the typical, you know, fat, fertile 40.
Exactly, that's what we were taught
14.
In medical school.
Right.
Yes, exactly. Wow. And we're seeing endocrine problems and things like that in younger and younger children. And by that, I mean things like polycystic ovarian syndrome and metabolic syndrome. And you don't think of a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old as possibly having insulin resistance or high blood pressure. But that's what we're starting to see.
So these metabolic diseases are creeping into our youngsters. Obesity, what are the rates now? They're going up, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. So at this point, about a third of the children in the country, and it depends on where you are in the country, and it also depends on which age group you're looking at, but about a third of our kids would count as being overweight or obese by medical criteria. Now, that's even worse, unfortunately, in some of our lower socioeconomic areas. Sometimes in those places, you might even get up to 50%. Like, we know that there's some communities in the Lehigh Valley where the children in that particular school catchment area are more like 50% are either overweight or obese based on the BMI criteria. Now, you can argue a little bit about whether the BMI is the correct way to diagnose it. I think that a BMI is a screening tool, and that's the first thing that we do. And then if or something that comes up as being concerning, then you go talk to your physician about, well, does this apply to my child? But from a school district standpoint, in Pennsylvania, that's a standard necessity. Like, every school district has to check the height and weight and do the BMI and send that home for the parents as a screening tool. That created a lot of frustration and irritation by parents when it was first initiated a couple of years ago, but it's been very helpful for us to get our hands around really how big of a problem is this here in Pennsylvania. And it turns out that it's a pretty large issue and something that we need to be addressing with our kids.
And we'll see how Dr. Greger addresses it later in the show. First this.
We don't need to go down that aisle.
But there might be cookies or candy or something that we really need.
But there's no cookies or candy on my shopping list.
Well, just because it's not on the shopping list doesn't mean we shouldn't buy it, does it?
Did you know that 40% of food in America gets thrown away because people overbuy?
Oh, look at this caramel peanut crunch. We really need this.
You're not even listening to me. How much is it?
Well, it's only $6.60.
$6.60? And we can't afford that. Besides, it's full of fat, sugar, and salt, so we don't need it.
But everything in our basket is so boring.
It won't be boring once we've cooked it nicely and we're hungry. And besides, there's a bonus.
Oh, what's that?
we'll enjoy healthy home-cooked food and be able to pay all the bills.
You sound just like my mother.
Oh, thank you. You know there's a law when it comes to grocery shopping?
And what's that?
Don't go shopping on an empty stomach.
Is that why I want to buy everything in the store, like Bobo's oat bars?
Probably is. You'll spend less if you plan more. Doctor's orders.
Bento boxes are a Japanese tradition. But you know, we've adopted them now. We can give school lunches so much more appeal, more variety, and more fun. And you know, they're good for adults as well, because when we eat at work and we just pick up whatever's around and it's free food, we can add 1,300 calories a week, which is all surplus to requirement. So take your lunch. And instead of just taking a sandwich and a little baggie, why don't you think about getting one of these lunch boxes? It gives you lots of freedom. You can get creative, but have a plan. Think about whole grain, a protein, a rainbow of veggies, some healthy fat, and maybe a small treat. When I say whole grain, what might we think of? We could think about a couscous salad or a quinoa salad. Of course, there's bread. There's bread, there's buns, there's wraps, there's pasta. Think about corn. There can be cornbread or corn on a cob. You can have that corn on a cob raw or you can steam it. Crackers. You can make a burger out of oats like that. You can have, for protein, perhaps some steamed edamame in a pod. I love interacting with my food. You could have hummus as a dip or in a sandwich. And you can do the same with lentils or some of your legumes, other legumes. You know, you can have beans, peas or lentils in a salad. You can also put beans into your patty and put them in a burger. Or you can make those falafels as a ball. Refried beans just out of a can that you can throw in a burrito. You can have scrambled tofu in a burrito. Baked tofu, you can put it on a skewer or throw it in some noodles. Have an eggless salad made with tofu. Or you can roast some chickpeas like this, some roasted legumes that you can just put in a jar and keep for a longer time. For our veggies, of course, you can use any veggies you want, but some that sort of hang together well are the crisper ones. Bell peppers, cucumbers, baby carrots, broccoli, collie. Cherry tomatoes, where you don't have to cut them ahead of time. Red or green onions, olives, avocado, either as a guacamole or just whole like that. Sugar snap peas, so those more crunchy vegetables are always great for a lunch that you take later and you'll eat later in the day. And then think about your salad greens, and then of course with a dressing, if you want a dressing. You can make veggie wedges. You can do oven-fried veggies as well. Then for healthy fats, what can we think of? Well, hummus has some sesame seed butter in, some tahini, so that's a lovely healthy fat. Pouring cheese, black bean dip, sour cream that you make with tofu or soy, guacamole, and then you can make salad dressings with all the seeds or the nuts. You can have trail mix as your treat, but it's got some healthy fat in there. Pistachios, but maybe your kids go to a school that's nut-free. Well, then think about some seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds that can go into their salad. You can roast them nicely on a dry pan for a couple of minutes and they pop, and they're ready to go. You can just keep them in a jar and they stay nice and crunchy. For treats, think about dates, dried fruit. You can make ants on a log, you know, a stick of celery with some nut butter in there and some raisins on top. We mentioned trail mix, dried fruit candy, popcorn. You can make pudding and put it in a little container like this or this. And then you can think about commercially available healthy foods like prepackaged slices that's got omega-3 fats or these whole wheat brownies that are great. So let's go along the table and see what we've got. Here we can just have a plain, big salad. It's got some chickpeas thrown in, so we've got some legumes in there. Then we've got some dressing. We've got some crunchy things, whether seeds or croutons, that you can make yourself out of whole grain bread. And then this is a little freezer section that you keep in the fridge overnight. Put that on and your salad is going to stay lovely, cool and fresh all day. In this one we've got some edamame that we can just eat. We can dip it in the hummus if we want, or put the hummus on of our salad, quinoa, kale, chickpeas. Here we've got a little silicone cup of trail mix. We can pop our guacamole in there. This one comes with a nice knife and fork, and we're ready to go out the door. We could have some beans and cornbread, perhaps. If you've made some homemade fries, you can throw that in as well. And then this is always fun, putting some fruit on a little stick and sending the kids out the door with that. In here we've got a jar with noodles, stir-fry vegetables, and some tofu or some other savory with satay sauce, some nice sauce. You could throw some sesame seeds over that. Then we move along here, another jar, rice, beans, salad, and we might throw some seeds on there for crunch and maybe add a dressing on the side. Here we've got a great little box. You know, you can make your sandwiches just plain, or you can cut them up into dolphins or dinosaurs or butterflies or fun things. Load that in. Probably want to put a couple of them in here. And then we've got some salad with some dressing, some berries on the side there. Pop the lid on, and this box comes again with a freezer section, so that will keep your sandwiches nice and cool on a hot summer day. Or you might want to do just a burger that you've made at home, some lettuce, tomato, and pop that in, and it's ready to go. So think about all these options, plan ahead, get them all ready on a Sunday, and you'll be set for the week. Floyd Rogers is an avid gardener whose health was impacted by an auto accident, but not in ways that you would expect. Watch.
I go to a farmer's market every week, and because we grow produce. Well, I'm going to start loading stuff. Is this ready?
Yeah.
As a result of an automobile accident, I found that I had a health problem that I didn't realize I had because I had never been sick. I prepared myself with a lot of studying and went to all this clinic. So I spent 2 weeks with them, and they changed the diet. They had a special diet that they had you on. And up to that point, I had been a big eater of animal products. And as a result of the information that I was getting and the classes that I were attending, I became a plant-based vegetarian. And I don't think I'd be alive today if I hadn't made that change. Okay, now we're going to the fire station. That's the only year-round farmer's market in Oroville. It's a pretty small market, particularly in the wintertime. But we have certain people that come every week, and they look forward to us being there, so we go. You know, when I set my mind to something, I'm pretty much decided. And I think anybody that wants to change their diet has to make a commitment to start with. You know, and you hear so many people say, oh, I can't give up my meat. Well, you can. And a lot of people say, what do you do for protein? Well, I eat greens.
Good morning, sir.
Hi, Terry.
How are you doing?
Good. And so I made the commitment. And I think that's the secret. You've got to make a commitment. A very short time later, I got a flyer in the mail that Amazing Fact was having a seminar in our little theater here in town, and so I went. So after joining the Seventh-day Adventist Church, I got more interested in the health message, and we had a health summit up in Oregon, and I went through there and ended up getting certified as a plant-based cook and came back to the home church, and we started putting on cooking classes. And actually, you know, this was the original diet in the scriptures. And so I believe in it, and I promote it, and I live it.
And living it is the most powerful proof of its veracity. In the first segment, we were discussing the overweight and obese child. I asked Dr. Greger if being young protects them from heart disease and strokes.
There's actually a study done or that was presented in the American Heart Association that at their national conference that looked at for kids. So like, what does this mean if our rates are going up? What does it mean? And they looked at children that were obese and they measured the carotid intima media thickness, which is basically a hardening of the arteries, looking at the arteries in their neck to see are they already seeing signs of vascular disease. And they saw that kids that were even just as young as 8 to 10 to 12 had the same hardening of the arteries as you would normally see in a middle-aged adult. And so that just means that these kids are going to be at risk for stroke and heart disease a lot earlier.
And is this children across the board, or is these particularly the obese children, the overweight children?
Correct. For the American Heart Disease study, that was obese children. But we're seeing insulin resistance almost across the board. So there was an NHANES study, which is the National Health and Nutrition Examination Study, and they looked at kids and said, okay, well, do we see any signs of insulin resistance in these kids? And what they found is that for children that do not participate in at least 1 hour of vigorous activity per week, didn't matter what their weight was.
Per week. This is a very
low bar. Very low bar. And unfortunately, they had many children who did not meet that bar of even 1 hour of vigorous activity every week. When they looked at those kids, over a third of them already had insulin resistance. It didn't matter whether they were overweight or not. If they didn't move, if they were pretty much, you know, couch potatoes, they were already showing signs of insulin resistance.
And that is so easy to reverse at that age. Once it's settled in, it becomes
much more difficult. And there's statistics that show that if you're overweight or obese at age 6, you have a 50% chance of becoming an overweight adult. If you are still overweight or obese, or if you became overweight or obese as an adolescent, now you have a 70% chance that you're going to be an overweight or obese adult. So the longer you wait to address it in a family, the more challenging it is to make the changes. And it's not that you can't make changes. I mean, there's never a time where you go, oh, you know, we've given up all hope. But the easier, or the earlier, is the easier.
Right, and those consequences, in probably the study you're talking about, depression followed hotly on the heels of the obesity in adulthood.
And bullying is another huge thing. For kids that are overweight or obese, there's a lot of data that shows they're more likely to be bullied. So that just adds on top of everything else. They can't necessarily be on the sports teams because they can't compete. They're more likely to be bullied. And then we all know that what we eat really affects our mood. So depending on what type of food that they're eating, things like depression and things like that can go along with it too.
Now, you also mentioned asthma. There is a link with obesity, or is asthma rates rising for some other reason?
I think there's a multifactorial reason for asthma rising. Our air quality is definitely one of them, but obesity is another piece of it. So there is a link between obesity and an increased risk for asthma. Unfortunately, a lot of times kids get a double or a triple whammy because they may live in an inner city area or an area that has poor air quality. And if they're already obese or that's part of what is happening because they're maybe in a built environment where they don't get much exercise or it might not be safe for them to be outside, now they are overweight or obese and they're in a space that has poor air quality. And if they're not having good access to prevent, or I shouldn't say preventive, but primary care, you know, regular ongoing relationship with a doctor or a healthcare provider, how are they supposed to manage that asthma? And so then they get into the situation where they're going to the ER because of their asthma exacerbations. And it's just hard to keep that under control, which means they're going to be less likely to exercise, because if they have that type of a reaction, they're not going to want to exercise or be active.
Talk a little bit about ADHD. Where is that going with our children? Is it rising?
Well, it's definitely something that we're seeing a lot more of in primary care. And people argue about, is it that it's actually rising? Is it more that we're diagnosing it more? But I know from the last 20 years of being a clinician that there is a lot more children that come into my office and cannot sit still. So that doesn't mean that they have ADHD. There's plenty of kids that can't sit still. But there's a whole lot of things going on in our culture that make it that children do not have the focus or the ability to have the self-control that they used to learn. And electronics is a lot of that, and constant like gratification of entertainment is a lot of that. Our food choices are a lot of that. So if you're spending a lot of your time on video games and you're eating things that are very high calorie, high sugar, high caffeine type of foods, that really affects your brain activity. And more so the developing brain, it seems, for younger kids. So if these kids are already, you know, they're starting to try to learn how to manage their impulsivity or their behaviors, and they're having sugar-sweetened beverages with a lot of caffeine and high salt and high fat foods, and they're on electronics all the time, they're going to have a really hard time focusing. And so is that ADHD, or is that just something that is an environmental the cause? However, there's definitely like a temporary thing, something that you could change their environment and they will get better. Now, there's definitely kids who have ADHD and they require medication. It's just there are smaller numbers of them, and then there's a large number of kids who they can't sit in their seat in class, they can't focus, and those kids, a lot of times, you have to work with a healthcare provider to really figure out what changes can I make in my environment to help my child be better with focus, be less distracted, be more able to finish a project.
Right, and the concern is they're developing. So at some point, is that going to be a lifelong problem, or is this a temporary thing that, you know, by making those changes, you can actually remove that problem of lack of focus?
Absolutely. And again, this is a whole range. You know, people are on a spectrum, but our brains are very plastic. There's a lot of ability to change, and even just doing, like when you do something over and over again, like play the violin, the part of your brain that is devoted to knowing how to play the violin gets bigger. You can see it on MRI. Same sort of thing with martial arts, any sort of sport. The same sort of thing with focusing and being able to concentrate and hold your attention. So the more you are able to practice it without distraction as a child, the better you're going to be able to continue doing it. And the same thing with food is a big one. So if you, I think almost any of us have seen this, if you have something that has a lot of sugar and a lot of caffeine, you're a little jittery. And we have adult brains that are already formed. So think about how that affects the child's brain. They have the ability to heal that or to change that as they get older, but the best thing is to be able to lay down the neural pathways that give you good habits to begin with, and that has to do with a lot of things like moving your body, getting enough sleep, and being able to focus without distraction when you have some sort of a project that you need to be able to do, or that you're needing to listen to your parents to do something.
And caffeine's one of many stimulants in food that can do that. So think about this. If diet contributes to attention deficit in kids, couldn't it do the same to adults? And if eating refined, sugary foods makes it more difficult for kids to follow parental commands, what about us trying to obey our Heavenly Father? These foods can look so tempting. They taste great. But you know, Eve examined that forbidden fruit up close. It looked physically nourishing, emotionally appealing, and she was told it would make her wise, it would expand her intellect, and so she took it and ate it. She then gave it to Adam. He ate it, and then, sure enough, their eyes were opened. They knew things they had never known before and could never have known otherwise. For one, they knew they were naked, and for two, they experienced shame, guilt. Their relationship with God was forever changed. It was broken. The first negative physical action ended up having physical, spiritual, and emotional consequences. You see, we're integrated beings, physical, emotional, intellectual, and at our core, we are spiritual. If we nurture one, we nurture them all. If we rob one, we rob them all. So optimal health requires nurture of our physical bodies, our emotions, our heart, our intellect, our mind, but also our relationship with God, our spiritual side. Physical inactivity takes the lives of over 5 million people around the world every year. So don't become a statistic. Come and join Sean right now and get the move on. What are we doing, Sean?
So today, you know how we do, right? We're going to do 3 exercises and we're going to do to the best of our ability. So join us in getting these exercises done. Now the first, you can grab some dumbbells, okay? And we do a combination exercise called a reverse lunge and a bicep curl, working the lower region and the upper region at the same time. So I'll face this way just to show you. One leg goes back, come back to the starting position, and then the other leg comes back, all right? You're working your biceps, and you're also working your balance and your quads. Great way to burn calories in the upper region and the lower region, okay? Keep your core tight. Go ahead. One. Give me 2 more. 3. And I want you to pause on the last one. If you want to make it a little bit more challenging, you could hold that position for about 10 seconds and then continue.
Ooh.
Yeah, it'll get you.
Feel the burn.
Yeah, so that is a reverse lunge with a bicep curl. Okay. Exercise number 2, you can grab a mat. You can do it wherever you choose. We're going to go down to the plank position, okay? So I'll be the instructor. You go into that plank position. All right, keep your core nice and tight. What we're going to do, in order for you to feel this in the core region, because we use the core for everything that we do, we're going to pick up one leg at a time, nice and straight, back down, slow and controlled. If you feel anything in your lower back, take a nice deep breath. You can go on your knee, reset, and restart again. Okay, there you go. Now, doing this for about 30 seconds, you're going to feel it in your arms, you feel it in your core region, you feel it in your glutes. So 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. All right, walk your feet to your hand, come up nice and easy. I like that. Ah, I like that. So number 3, now we work some of the lower body and the upper body. We work some of the core region. Now we're going to work the shoulders, okay? So grab those dumbbells, and we're going to do what they call an Arnold press, okay? It's a rotation of the dumbbell facing your palm or facing your face.
Okay.
And then as you go up, the weight rotates forward, okay? So press all the way up, boom, yep, and come right back down to that starting position. This is called Arnold press, and put that weight a little bit closer to you when you bring it down. Yes, as if there is a wall right in front of you, right? Now, if this exercise gets tough, as you're pushing up, exhale. Right? What ends up happening a lot is we get hypoxic, we hold our breath because we're trying to do something new, and then when we put the weight down, we get dizzy. All right. So try 3 more. 1. Yes. Exhale. And perfect. So there you go. You have your Arnold press. You could do each of these exercises for reps, maybe 12 reps, 12, 15 reps, or you can do it for time, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, or if you want to challenge yourself, a minute. But putting that rest in between is very key for you to be able to do the exercise to the best of your ability.
All right. And now we need a little stretch.
You got to stretch, right? So feet nice and wide.
Yep.
Before you go down or put your head forward, take a nice deep breath. Inhale and exhale. Inhale and exhale. Hands down to the middle. We're going to reach. You'll feel some in your hamstring. All right. Let's go over to your left side. You'll feel that hamstring.
Nice stretch.
Yes. And then over to the right side. Back to the center. Come up nice and easy. Roll your vertebrae one at a time. Bring your feet back together. And because we work some of the upper body, we want to work the shoulder or stretch the shoulder. Okay? So bring that arm across the body. Keep your core nice and tight still. Don't get lazy.
That's it.
I know. And then switch. Through the exercise or through the stretch, this is where you want to get your breathing, preparing you for tomorrow's exercise so you're not as sore, right? Last but not least, get a good stretch in your neck. We tend to hold a lot of our stress in our neck. Switch directions. And last but not least, roll your shoulders back. We tend to drive a lot at the computer. Maybe like this, so might as well open up the chest a little bit.
Absolutely. And that gives those biceps a bit of a stretch.
Absolutely.
Too. You'll find more of these exercises in a couple of videos called Fitness for Good at HopeChannelStore.com. Thanks, Sean.
What could you do with an extra 5 years? Earn a degree, visit the 7 modern wonders of the world, or kiss your great-grandchild's cheek? You can do a lot in 5 years. 5 years is the difference that researchers found in the life expectancy between vegetarian and non-vegetarian Adventists. The Adventist Health Study found that vegetarians lived 5 years longer than their non-vegetarian counterparts. Adopting a vegetarian diet could add 5 years to your life and is another ageless advantage.
I've had so many questions come in this week, but I'm just going to tackle a few. Maribel asks, how can I improve my immune system? Daily exercise, outdoors if possible, in the sunshine, fresh air. Don't eat any added sugars. Eat just healthy foods. Manage your stress, and that includes the spiritual side of life, you know, trusting in God. Get 7 to 9 hours sleep every night. Drink only water and plenty of it. If you smoke, it's time to give up. And remember to take 1 day off each week to really rejuvenate and recover from the stresses of the week. Someone asked, what foods are best for menopause? Well, let's think about the health challenges that menopause brings. There's kind of immediate things like hot flashes and night sweats, and then sleep issues, which knocks your concentration. And then longer term, there's bone thinning, and the drop in estrogen will also increase the risk of cardiovascular disease. So, dehydration and chocolate will make hot flashes worse. So be sure to step up your water intake. You're going to be sweating a bit more. And leave the chocolates in the box on the shelf at the supermarket. Same with alcohol, caffeine, and spicy foods. Now, it's been found women who lose 5% of their body weight around the time of menopause will have fewer hot flushes. So cut back on high-fat foods, step up the exercise and see if you can lose some of that weight. But also, weight-bearing exercise is a good thing to remember at this time because that's also going to help your bones while you're burning the calories. And it's going to reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease. So you get global benefits here from that exercise. So start lifting weights or doing resistance type exercises. Avoid salt and alcohol because those thin bones. Cruciferous veggies like kale and broccoli have plenty of bioavailable calcium. They're also going to help with estrogen. Soy can be helpful for hot flashes because of the phytoestrogens, and tofu has also got a lot of calcium in there for your bones. Now, you might want to think about vitamin D so that you can absorb all that calcium. So get your vitamin D level checked, or perhaps just supplement if you're low or if you can't get it checked. Someone else asked, how can I lose weight in a healthy way? And I love that question because it reminds us that we can lose weight in unhealthy ways. So I'll just say do three things. Eat a large breakfast, smaller lunch, and a tiny supper or nothing in the evenings. Exercise before breakfast and drink only water. Try those three and you'll be off to a good start. Now, if you have a question, there are four ways you can contact us. Facebook, text, email, or phone. Go to Facebook, become part of the Go Healthy for Good community. Now, let's see what's good eating down at the store. Eggplant is known as aubergine, brinjal, and even Guinea squash. It belongs to the nightshade family, so it's related to the tomato, the potato, the peppers, like sweet bell pepper or capsicum. It was domesticated in India, where it's made into the most delicious curries. In Italy, there's the famous eggplant parmesan. In France, ratatouille. In Turkey and Greece, there's moussaka. And in the Middle East, it's roasted whole and then turned into baba ganoush. It's my favorite vegetable. I even put it on my pizza. However, it's high in histamine, so some people sort of don't tolerate it, and they don't tolerate any of the nightshades. I've actually seen arthritis improve by eliminating all those nightshades. But if you're fortunate enough to tolerate it, then bon appetit. Today's guest is Dr. Megan Greger, an MD who saw a need and started the Callan Foundation. Here she explains the foundation and the work that they're doing.
The Callan Foundation is a grassroots 501c3 nonprofit that's dedicated to family and child wellness. And we have four main program areas. One is Callan Health, and that has to do with intervention programs and helping families live a healthier lifestyle. Another is Callan Schools, which is going out into the elementary schools and middle schools in our area. We're in about 9 school districts, and we see about 9,000 children a year going on a classroom-by-classroom basis, doing healthy lifestyle, nutrition, interactive presentations, as well as school garden programs. So that's a really important part of Callan Schools, because there's nothing better to help children eat healthy food than to have them grow it themselves or to help prepare it themselves. So we do cooking demonstrations too, which goes along with Callan Kitchens, which is another piece of Callan Foundation, where we go out into community settings, community centers, senior centers, YMCAs, after school programs, and cook plant-based, whole food, seasonal meals with the people that are part of our program in that space, and actually get to get them involved cooking it, and they get to eat it, and we all get to enjoy a meal together, kind of like sets the social piece of it. And then there's the Eat Real Food Mobile Market, which is something that where we take fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains and healthy things into areas of food insecurity, places where they don't have access to a grocery store. So if you are living in, we actually have 8 food deserts in the Lehigh Valley. What we do with the food with the areas that have food deserts or food insecurity, which just means, yes, there are little grocery stores, like little corner stores, but they lack access to fresh produce or healthier options. We bring in the Eat Real Food Mobile Market once a week to these areas, and we have local produce, so our first priority is to get produce from our local farms if we can, if it's in season. If it's something that doesn't grow in the Lehigh Valley, we bring it in from elsewhere, you know, bananas, avocados, things like that are not going to grow in our area. And then we bring this into the actual neighborhoods, and we park in these different sites, same sites every week, so we'll be there for 2 hours or 3 hours. A lot of the times we're in elementary school parking lots or church parking lots, places where people are, they gather to begin with, and they're able to count on us as their grocery store because we'll be there every week. We can take SNAP benefits, which is the EBT card, what used to be called food stamps. We can take cash, we can take credit, debit cards. So we can basically act like we're a grocery store on wheels that also has nutrition education and food sampling. That's the best part, is being able to, when kids walk by, say, would you like to try a little piece of kohlrabi? And they're like, what's kohlrabi? And you're like, look, it's this really funky looking vegetable. You want to give it a try? And I'm amazed how kids, they love this food. It's just that they've never had the opportunity to taste it before, especially not taste it fresh, and that's the key. So we have all these different programs that work together to try and help families in multiple different parts of their life, the schools, their neighborhoods, and also the healthcare arena.
So how would they access a Kellen Foundation or Kellen Health? Do you call it Kellen Health?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep.
How do they access that?
So the intervention programs are run in different places, sometimes in residency programs. Sometimes we've run them at our own site. The biggest issue is that there's not really insurance reimbursement for those. So they are referred, or either they self-refer, or their physician refers them into the program. And we've always had it as either a no cost to the patients or a sliding scale sort of cost. But what they do then is join the program, and we kind of think of it as a boot camp or an immersion experience for the first 10 weeks, where they get to individually meet with a physician or another healthcare provider. They do that 3 times over that 10-week period, sort of doing some of their screening tests and looking at their personal goals. But there's also a group nutrition piece to it, a structured exercise piece to it, and a journaling piece, which is an online daily lifestyle survey so that they're actually tracking some of their behaviors. Then after the immersion piece, they end up doing maintenance time where they go every other month and see their doctor, things like that. So the way people access it is usually through either a physician or a parent getting a BMI report card saying, my child is having potential issues, what should I do?
Right, so I was just going to ask, what issues do children come? It's for children?
It's for children, but it's really for families. We really try to get the whole family involved, and we're moving into the area of doing it separately for adults, but it was initially designed for children and families. So usually it's that they're coming in either that they're already overweight, they're already obese, they already have high blood pressure. We've had kids come in with high triglycerides, high cholesterol, or just the parents come in and say, I can't get them to eat anything healthy. You know, like they're such picky eaters. I know that they have very little exercise tolerance. Like I see they get exhausted. They're not out running around or doing things. They're coming in asking for help. Like, how can we as a whole family get better? Because a lot of times the kid is not, at this point, the child is not yet sick, but maybe the mom might have diabetes, or the grandma might have diabetes, or the dad might have hypertension and high cholesterol, and they say, you know, we don't want this to happen to our child, so we want to make the changes because we see that the child is going in that direction. Like, they're only wanting to eat chicken nuggets and french fries, and they won't eat any vegetables. And we say, that, we can work on that.
We'll hear how in the next segment, so stand by. Floyd's car crash alerted him to health problems he never knew he had. It was enough to turn him into a plant-based vegetarian, a passionate plant-based vegetarian who learned how to teach plant-based cooking. Combining that with his love for gardening, he's now at the farmer's market every week, sharing his knowledge and changing lives. Watch.
You can eat the greens too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? You just steam them and...
Yeah. You won't be able to tell the difference in them than collard greens. I feel that I wouldn't be alive today if I hadn't made this dietary change. I made a commitment to this, and I believe it's paid off for me 100%. I think my health is a testimony to that. I don't know how many people that are my age don't take any medicines. You know, they generally got a suitcase they pack around with pills. Okay, so that's three. That's $9. Okay. I'm about 75 pounds lighter than I was before I started eating this way. I have had no health problems, really. Right now, I got the first cold I've had in 12 years. I don't know why. I'm 81 years old. In fact, I try to stay away from doctors. You know, a lot of people say, well, do as I tell you, not as I do. But that's not the way it works. You have to live what you say. And that's my philosophy. I go to a farmer's market and people, lots of people aren't acquainted with a wide range of vegetables. And we grow a wide range of things. And they'll say, well, how do you fix that? And I'll tell them how I do it and the benefit, health benefits from it.
What do you do with a kohlrabi?
Well, you can eat the tops just like you would a green. You can steam them. And these you can peel. You can either eat them raw or you can steam them.
Let me try them anyway.
Then they come back and we get to know one another pretty well. But I never fail to tell a person what I think about diet, and I never hesitate to tell somebody how to fix something.
When I started this farmer's market about 3 years ago, boy, it was telling you about all the different health benefits from eating vegetables and stuff, trying to get away from meats and everything. And I listened to him a little bit, and then over the years, I started listening to him more, and come to find out, I got off my insulin for my diabetics. I'm only taking pills now, and vegetables are not bad at all once you get used to them. As they always say, you have to acquire a taste for them, and I have, so it's done me and my family well.
I'm sincere, and I live what I speak. I think that makes a difference.
And that's exactly what today's guest does too.
So what we do with Cowan Schools is we go into the third, fourth, and fifth grades. Mostly because in elementary schools, at that time, the kids are old enough to really be able to engage with the topics, but young enough that they are still in a situation where they are not, first of all, quite as rebelling against authority.
Independent.
That's a very good way. And also, just from a structural standpoint, the kids are not changing classrooms.
What do you teach them?
So in third grade, we teach something called Eat Real Food, which is all about teaching the kids to be food detectives and what is real food. And our answer basically is real food is whole food, non-processed food. So things like fruits and vegetables, things like whole grains, beans, nuts, seeds, things like that. And then we kind of ask them to be food detectives with us. So we go on this little journey where we are like with our slides and show them examples of things and ask them to vote. Like, is this real food or is this not real food? And see what the kids say. And then we discuss it and say, okay, most of you, almost all of you, knew that Red Bull is not real food or a real drink or maybe, you know, 5-hour energy. But a lot of you guys thought that something like Gatorade or Powerade is real food. And as a doctor or as a mom, I wouldn't agree with that statement. So let's talk about why do you think that way? And we talk about marketing and advertising and talk about what would actually be the better drink, like water or things like that. We do the same thing by looking at breakfast foods or snack foods or juices and fruits and kind of and then we pull that into gardening and growing your own real food and cooking your own real food. So third grade is really mostly about identifying real food, whole food, plant-based food, and being a food detective. And then we all get to eat a healthy snack together. So that's the best part of the third grade program. And it integrates into the science curriculum. So one of the key things is that you have to know what your standards are for your state, for your schools, and say, okay, I want to bring this education into the school. What standard does it fit into? So in third grade, it fits into the science curriculum. In fourth grade, we do healthy choices, which is the red, yellow, green foods, which is basically a label reading, a nutrition label reading thing. because once they're in fourth grade, they have their math skills are good enough to be able to understand percentages and to do some of the math that you need to do. And they're also getting a little bit older, so we're moving into things like snack foods and things that come in boxes and bags. And we review the stuff from third grade and say, okay, you guys all remember what real food is. Real food is the fruits and the vegetables, the whole grains. What are you going to do if you have a box? How can you decide if this is something that's, you know, pretty healthy for you or something that you should stay away from? And we talk about how many grams of fat, what percentage of sugar. But along with all of that, we are again having them voting, and we're having them say, okay, here's a box of Honey Smacks. And by show of hands, how many of you think that this is going to be a green food, which is like the healthy go foods? How many of you think it's going to be a yellow? How many think it's going to be a red? And then we show them the numbers, and they're always like, yes, or oh, no. This is, you know, but we talk through, like, okay, this maybe is not your healthiest choice. Can anybody come up with another choice that might be a healthier choice? And that's the key, is to get the kids involved. If you just get up and talk to them, they're opening their desks, they're playing with their, you know, pencils, yeah, and things.
And what do you do in fifth grade?
So in fifth grade, we do eating out survival skills, because now the kids are getting a little bit more independent, a little bit more social, and we want them to think about, okay, if you're out at a fast food restaurant, if you're out at a party, you're out at a friend's house, what are some of your healthier choices? Because you shouldn't just give up and say, oh, I'm in McDonald's, and so I'm just going to eat this terrible food because I'm here, and what else am I going to do? But actually, at most places, you can find choices that are not that bad. Now, maybe the majority are not healthy, but you can still be a food detective and find something that you can go out and be social, but you're going to be able to not, you know, do really unpleasant things to your body. And we also talk about, like, if you do go out and eat something that is not healthy, it's not the end of the world, but then think about what you're going to eat the rest of the day to kind of balance that out, because you didn't really give your body the nutrition that you needed then, but you got a couple other options during the day, so let's make healthier choices later.
And where does that insert? Is there a curriculum that...
Oh, yeah, so the fourth grade is in the math curriculum, and the fifth grade is in the health curriculum. And then we wrap all of that with the garden as a classroom, and that's the raised bed gardens at the schools where the kids get to actually grow their own tomatoes and peppers and mesclun mix and spinach and kale and beans and all sorts of things. So we go back several times during the year. The kids plant with us, then they and the teachers water. We get to harvest and eat together. So that is a very effective program. Getting kids to actually grow the food and then taste the food is one of the best things that I really love that part of my job. Some of the things that really thrive is also the kids that get back in touch with us the next year and they're like, I took my tomato plant home and it grew and my family had tomatoes all summer. And like, they're so proud of the fact that they were able to do this. They fed their family. Exactly. So, I mean, we have stories, tons of them. So, and this really resonates with the kids, because it's like you're not telling them that they have to do something. That doesn't usually work with children at all, but you're asking them to kind of like be a detective and think through their choices. What's the logical outcome of their choices? What things they might think would be better? And by involving them in that process, you're giving them that self-efficacy that, hey, these are your choices. And usually when I end my presentations at all three grades, I say, whose job is it for you to be healthy? Whose job is that? And the kids, you know, sometimes they'll raise their hand. They'll be like, my mom, my doctor. But most of them get it. And by the fifth grade, they definitely get it, that they'll say, it's mine. And I'm like, exactly. Other people can help you. Your doctor can help you, your teacher, your parents, your brother and sister. But the choices you make about the food that you eat and the exercise you do and how much screen time you have, because that's a big one that we talk about, how much sleep you get, because that's a big thing that we talk about, all of these choices are what's going to add up to whether you spend a whole lot of time with people like me, doctors, when you are older, or whether you're going to be able to be climbing mountains and, you know, playing on the beach with your grandkids and almost never needing to go see a doctor at all. The choice is yours. And that's part of what we really try and instill in them, is that they're the food detectives. They can decide, and they're smart enough to do it. They have the tools to do it. It's just a choice.
Just a choice. To eat more veggies, to be more active, or like Floyd, to become a plant-based vegetarian. Knowing what to do, why, and how can make or break that choice. That's what the Callan Foundation is all about, empowering individuals, families, and communities to choose healthful living. If you want to know more, go to callan.org. That's all for me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.